It'll be gone by afternoon. It was, but I never forgot it. I still remember that fateful trip 30 years later. The turkey sandwiches and margaritas that Rancho Encantado matriarch Betty Egan, long-legged in jeans and cowboy boots, her hair in a thick white braid, offered me and my colleague upon our late-night arrival. The handwritten invite to Santa Fe Cafe, the tiny Tasuki post office that's rarely crowded. I flew back to Los Angeles to edit the New Mexico filmmaking issue of The Hollywood Reporter that had brought me to Santa Fe in the first place. I love Los Angeles, too. Still, Santa Fe felt like a point of destiny for me, just as L.A. was. I moved here. I bought my own sorrel horse, Rio, a muscular little Mustang whom I loved through time and space, and always felt connected to, even when I was 1,000 miles away. I was braver on Rio than alone. We loped into the wilderness, and I felt like all was right with the world, and I would find the places I was meant to go. Together, we discovered much of what I love about New Mexico. Rio's gone now. He died after 15 stellar years together, roaming Tasuki's hills. But the spirit of discovery remains. What I love most about New Mexico is the open landscape that calms me, the grounded feeling I get driving along Bishop's Lodge Road by the Tasuki River, the horse crossing signs that portend possible equine encounters, and the friendships I've made here with kindred creative souls. This special place appeals to a rainbow of people. Game of Thrones creator George R.R. Martin might be one of the most surprising. He came as a tourist in 1978, fell in love, moved here the following year, and put down roots. Now, chief world builder for Santa Fe's Meow Wolf, he also owns Jean Cocteau Cinema, Beastly Books, and Stagecoach Foundation, some of which were temporarily closed at press time due to the coronavirus outbreak. Santa Fe is one of the oldest cities in the U.S., older than anything even on the East Coast, he told National Geographic. Because it's a state capital, it has many amenities that you associate with a larger city, great museums and wonderful restaurants. At the same time, I like the small town thing. You can get in the car and get anywhere in 10 minutes. Santa Fe, to my mind, has the most perfect climate in the world. All four seasons, all distinct, but none extreme. Then there's the question of addiction. When I got to Santa Fe, I became addicted to green chili. I can't imagine life anywhere else. Creative folks have flourished here since the early 1900s. New Mexico is like that, wrote the novelist Conrad Richter. You never know in what obscure canyon or on what sun-baked mesa you will find an artist or a scholar in exile. It's true. Here's what some of them told me. Ryan Bingham, songwriter, singer, actor Ryan Bingham, 39, joined forces with producer T-Bone Burnett on the soundtrack for the movie Crazy Heart, filmed in New Mexico, co-writing and performing the Academy Award-winning song The Weary Kind. He's released 6 albums and appeared on the TV series Yellowstone. What makes New Mexico special? New Mexico will always be where I'm from. I was born in Hobbs and lived there on and off in my childhood. The New Mexico landscape, both the wide barrenness of the southeastern part of the state, as well as the beauty of the high desert mountain around Santa Fe and the northern area, has always felt like home and held a specific inspiration for me. There's just something in the air, something ancient and spooky, but beautiful. It's the land of enchantment. To experience his new his New Mexico, you need to get outside and stomp around off the beaten track. Go for a hike and breathe in the air. Watch the sunset from anywhere and spend the night gazing up the stars. Then wake up and go find some green chili for breakfast. Favorite season is the chili harvest in the fall. It's a festive time when people are out roasting chili on the streets. His favorite place is just about anywhere, but I enjoy spending time down around Hatch. Aaron Wade, a graduate of Harvard University and a former budding fashion designer in Milan, Wade is the proprietor of the salad-eccentric Vinaigrette, the feel-good, a micro-bistro and wine bar, and modern general restaurants in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, plus a farm in Nambe. Quintessential New Mexico meals at Vinaigrette and Modern General. At Vinny, one of my favorite salads is La Pepita. It's super refreshing, but has smoky chili notes from the chili pepitas, which play off the creamy avocado, pulled chicken, black beans, cotija, and chopped kale. Then we snap it all together with a bright lemony cumin vinaigrette. At MG, one of my favorites is the green chili cilantro corn cakes. They are a savory pancake made with corn flour, green chili, scallions, cilantro, and other goodies folded in. We serve it with a cilantro crema and red chili maple syrup. What makes New Mexico special? Oh man, the quality of life, the connection to nature, and the stark beauty of the landscape. The darkness of the skies at night, the quiet, the unique mishmash of so many cultures, the history. I came here to get my hands in the dirt and figure out what really mattered, and I stayed because I loved it. To experience here in New Mexico, drive to Chimayo and have nachos and a Chimayo cocktail at Rancho de Chimayo. Drive a little farther up to Cundillo and see one of the most beautiful vistas in the whole state. Go hiking on the Del Ball trails or in Rio in Medio. Visit a farm. Nature just permeates life here in a way it doesn't in other places. Going to bed to the crazy preternatural yips and yowls of coyotes is my nightly ritual, although I fear for my chickens also nightly. And I miss it when I'm away. The sound of frogs around our irrigation pond, which I once thought were cows because they are so loud. Walking through a stand of cottonwoods, looking up at our bright blue sky, walking through the garden in the morning in summer, and coming away smelling like the spicy green of tomato vines. Allie McGraw. This actress, model, author, yoga devotee, and animal rights activist gained fame starring in Love Story. A longtime Tasuke resident, in 2016 she reunited with her Love Story co-star Ryan O'Neal in a staging of the play Love Letters that toured the country. Why she moved here? I moved to New Mexico after helping a friend decorate her house here because my rented house in Malibu burnt in the big Malibu fire in 1993. Why she stays? I find the tremendously varied population interesting, a lot of them reinventing themselves. I love the air, the immense amount of nature, especially where I live, and it just feels peaceful and sane and hopeful. And I love to open the door to my house and feel peace. Those are my books. There are my cats. Experience her New Mexico by driving north of Abiquiu and survey the landscape minus the footprint of human beings. When I see those endless beautiful vistas, I experience gratitude and hope. Her favorite season is fall, It's not really cold, and the colors are so extraordinary against our suddenly even bluer sky and reflected in the Rio Grande, with wonderful strange flowers and grasses. And there are all these back-to-back little village art shows that make a Sunday drive very special. I'm invigorated by it. I love it. Her favorite restaurant and dish, she loves Café Pascal's in Santa Fe. That's my most favorite. The food is extraordinary. The creativity. And I go to the Tasuki Village Market because it's right down the street. I bring my dog. I always have little tacos and scrambled eggs and pico de gallo coffee with everybody's dogs watching. It's heaven. Michael Martin Murphy. A country rock personality since his song Wildfire, Murph lived in Taos during the 1980s and now divides his time between homes in Texas, Colorado, and Red River, New Mexico, where he is scheduled to perform again this summer, kicking off with June's Rocking 3M Chuckwagon Show. What makes New Mexico special? It's the outdoors. It's the western atmosphere, the trail riding, fishing, hiking, working cattle. It's playing music in the mountains. All these things keep me coming back. What makes New Mexico unique is it's multicultural. I've made friends here with several medicine men and elders at Taos Pueblo, and I've found out more about the 1,000-year-old Hispanic community, sheep herders, cattle ranchers, vaqueros, the arts and crafts, the food, how they irrigate their pastures. Go here if you do one thing, go immediately to Taos Pueblo. It has one of the most interesting tours you'll ever see. They know their history. There's no other state where that many pueblos and ancient people are still vibrant and in business. To experience his New Mexico, come to his Rocking 3M Amphitheater. We serve meals and the concerts are on a lake. You can fish off the backstage. It's covered in a tent in case of weather. It's a mountain experience. It's my answer to Branson without the traffic. Shovel Shepherd. Shovel, who turns 18 on June 18th, won television singing competition The Voice in 2018 and lives in Farmington, New Mexico in the Four Corners area where she grew up. To experience her New Mexico, try green chili. Go to Meow Wolf in Santa Fe. Watch our sports teams like the Ice Wolves, United, and the Isotopes. Go to concerts. Ride horses. The best concert venue is Sandia Resort and Casino in Albuquerque. I opened for Little Big Town there, and every seat is a great seat, and you can see the whole stage. Her favorite season is summer. It's green and warm, but it's a dry heat, so you can actually cool off in the shade, unlike Nashville. If she could down a mezcal with any New Mexican, past or present, well, I'm not old enough to drink, but it would be Glenn Campbell, who lived in Albuquerque for a while. I'd have an iced tea or mint tea. Matthew Charlie, an award-winning Navajo silversmith. Charlie, 27, lives in the Red Springs area of Navajo Nation and grew up in Navajo Nation in northwestern New Mexico. Why he stays? It keeps me grounded and close to my people and connected to the land. It's home. The Navajo people are family-oriented. It's peaceful. It's a remote location, so the nearest grocery store and gas station is in Gallup. Best time to visit Navajo Nation? The summer. You'll come across food stands then all over the nation, the Navajo Nation. They'll be selling Indian fry bread. If he could down a mezcal with any New Mexican, past or present, it would be Chief Manuelito. I'd want to hear about what he wanted to pass down to us. I'd have a nice cup of coffee with him. Folgers, probably. That's a brand on the Navajo Reservation. Maybe I'd treat him to a vanilla latte. There's a Starbucks in Gallup. Brad Hochmeyer, founder of KTAOS, solar-powered 101.9 FM radio in Taos. Hochmeyer moved here from Vermont and is the afternoon DJ. Why he stays? I have never seen a community so committed to protecting its environment and culture. Taos is filled with tolerance, and it's exciting to see creative people engaged in cutting-edge projects that push boundaries. Taos also attracts outdoor enthusiasts, from rafters and boaters to mountain bikers, skiers, hikers, and climbers. The views are remarkable, and the weather is ideal for being outdoors. Rocky Gorman. Jewelry designer Rocky Gorman owns Rocky Gorman Gallery in Santa Fe. It's denim or tiered skirts, boots, and loads of silver and turquoise jewelry. For the Santa Fe Indian Market or the Santa Fe Opera, I'd recommend layers with a solid top and skirt or pants and a ruana. Her favorite season is fall. The smell of pinyon wood burning in the fireplaces and roasted chilies is intoxicating to me. I adore the crisp, cooler evenings and warm days. Who fits in New Mexico? Open-minded, spiritual, art-loving, jewelry-wearing, fearless individuals. Ann Hillerman. Having spent most of her life in New Mexico, the New York Times best-selling author and daughter of author Tony Hillerman has continued writing her dad's Leaphorn Chi series of Indian country mysteries, with 5 published so far and a movie TV option taken out by Robert Redford and George R.R. Martin. What makes New Mexico special? The expansive landscape, from the north where we have the end of the Rockies down to White Sands and the desert and Mexican border, and the state's long history of being open to people who go by the sound of their own drum, people who reinvent themselves, and the food. To experience her New Mexico, do something that has to do with our Native Americans' culture, like the Santa Fe Indian Market, or the Gathering of Nations powwow in Albuquerque, or the Gallup intertribal ceremonial. Visit Zuni and Taos Pueblo. Also, visit some of our other special places, Magdalena, Ruidosa, Chama, and other small towns that are full of interesting, quirky side notes of history. Inspirational places in Indian country. Chaco Canyon. When I was working on Spider-Woman's Daughter, I wanted to include a place with natural mystery as part of my mystery. For Cave of Bones, I went to El Malpai, a volcanic landscape where you can hide in an ancient magical landscape. And go to Shiprock to see the Bonolith or the flea markets throughout Shiprock, which have herbs for healing, sheepskins, lots of jewelry, things you wouldn't see in mainstream America that give you insight into the Navajo culture. Cassidy Dennison. Barrel racer Dennison has rodeoed all over the West, from Texas, Wyoming, and Nevada to New Mexico, where she impressed the city of Gallup so much that it proclaimed November 1, 2014 as Cassidy Dennison Day. She lives in the Navajo Nation. To experience her New Mexico, live in Tohatchi. I'm still competing, and I'm currently 28 years old. To experience my New Mexico, green chili and the turquoise jewelry are a must. All year there are rodeo functions, but rodeo season mostly starts in April. The Gallup Intertribal Ceremonial is a really fun rodeo. Michael Hurd, scion of the Wyeth Hurd art dynasty. Michael is the son of painters Peter Hurd and Henriette Wyeth Hurd. He grew up in the family's historic ranch in San Patricio in southern New Mexico, riding horses and playing polo. Hurd now paints landscapes that explore the area's mystique, and he invites visitors to his Hurd La Rinconada gallery and guest homes and winery to experience a stay in a historic adobe and enjoy a nice glass of wine. To experience his New Mexico, we've rebuilt the old adobe houses on the ranch, and we rent them out to nightly guests. One of the houses is called La Helenita, after the actress Helen Hayes, who was a friend of my mother's and a frequent guest. We don't have horses anymore, but you can rent them nearby. This is a great place for history buffs and people who like to fish or hike in the hills or enjoy art. We have three generations of artists in the gallery, and we have a winery on the property called Sentinel Ranch Winery, named after a bill on the ranch called Sentinel Peak that was a lookout for invading bands of Indians and some rough people out of Texas who would come through and raise hell in nearby Lincoln in the 1800s. What makes New Mexico special? Of course, I'm partial to San Patricio, the landscape and all the history here. I live in a house that was built by a cowboy, gunfighter, and member of the Lincoln County Regulators, Frank Coe, who was friends with Billy the Kid. Billy would stay in my house. There were bars and gambling places here. The soldiers and hellraisers from Lincoln would have fun in San Patricio. What's nearby? Historical Lincoln is just 10 miles from here, made famous by Billy the Kid, Pat Garrett, and other Wild West characters straight out of the Lincoln County War. Ruidoso is a half hour away, with skiing in winter, horse racing in summer, hiking and a zip line. There's a whole ring of historic villages around us, like Carrizozo and White Oaks, which has a quaint bar called the No Scum Allowed Saloon. Billy the Kid frequented it. If he could down a mezcal with any New Mexican, past or present, it'd be Pancho Villa, who rode into New Mexico from Mexico and revolutionized it, and also Wernher von Braun, who was the architect of the rocket program at White Sands. Joanne Garcia, the supervisor park ranger at Carlsbad Caverns National Park. Garcia was born and raised in Carlsbad, worked at the National Mall in Washington, D.C., before returning to Carlsbad, tucked away in far southeastern New Mexico. To experience her New Mexico, we lit up the caves so we could see more, but now it's more of a preservation story. We're moving lights away from the water, and we don't have algae growing. I love the caves, desert, animals, and plants. There are bats, raccoons, hawks, cave swallows, snakes, mice, mule deer, Barbary sheep, owls, and all kinds of plants like cactus and yucca. There are over 100 caves. Levi Romero. New Mexico, newly named and very first poet laureate, Romero grew up in Dixon in the Imbuda Valley north of Chimayo. He now lives in Albuquerque, where he teaches Chicano studies at the University of New Mexico. To experience his New Mexico, go to the Dixon Co-op Market. Talk to the locals. What makes New Mexico special are the diversity and inclusion, and how, for the most part, we embrace each other's cultures and histories and try to move forward progressively. Who fits in New Mexico? Anybody that doesn't fit in anywhere else. New Mexico is for individualists who are receptive to the idea of community. John D'Amelia, formerly a surgical oncologist in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, D'Amelia moved to Shiprock in Navajo Nation to be chief of surgery at Northern Navajo Medical Center after reading about it in the New York Times. To experience his New Mexico, he likes in hike in the Sand Canyon, cross-country ski, mountain bike. A friend owns a houseboat on Navajo Lake, and I can go there. We have a lot of mesas here, and we have mesa nights to watch stars and have an outdoor barbecue. I feel like I'm part of a cowboy movie out here. I wear boots and an occasional bolo. I like the people here. It's one of the most satisfying jobs I've had. Connie Collis. Collis is horse stables director at the Hyatt Regency Tamaya Resort and Spa at Santa Ana Pueblo in central New Mexico. To experience her New Mexico, we pair you with the right horse. You ride out on the Santa Ana Pueblo and feel transformed. You can see wildlife of all kinds, animals, cactuses, beautiful mountains, flowers, petroglyphs. The Tamaya Horse Rehab Fundraiser is our big annual fundraising event where our mission is to rescue and rehab unwanted horses who would otherwise have an uncertain future. Steve Stucker. The popular Stucker has been the morning show weatherman and co-host on KOB-TV in Albuquerque for almost 30 years and is an avid motorcyclist. The best weather, he's very partial to summer. The mornings are wonderful. I can sit in the sun on the patio, reading and drinking my pinion coffee. In the afternoon, 90 degrees with 5% humidity is perfect, especially if I'm floating in the pool. The moment the sun goes down, the temps drop quickly, and a cool night makes it very hard to go to bed. Take it from a guy who has to wake up for work at 2:30 a.m. To experience his New Mexico, raft the rapids in Pilar, thinking he was going to die. Skied downhill at Ski Santa Fe at much higher speed than my skills should allow. Stood on Sandia Crest, seeing what seems to be half our state. Perhaps my favorite is four-wheeling up the trail to Elk Mountain in the Pecos. And there is our annual rally in the valley, motorcycle ride to Angel Fire to benefit the charity I funded, bedsforkids.org. Who fits in New Mexico? All kinds of people, from adventurous to brainy to business savvy, from artists to athletes. Who wouldn't love it here?
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading out of True West magazine. We'll be reading a story from the April 2020 edition of True West. Across the Old Southwest by Johnny D. Boggs. Wyatt Earp, Hat Garrett, and Wild Bill Hickok were tough lawmen of the West, but no outlaw ever wanted Bass Reeves on his trail. Outlaws tried to avoid him at all cost if they could, Art T. Burton tells me. Once given the warrant for arrest, if you tried to hide, Reeves would find you. If you tried to run, Reeves would catch you. If you tried to shoot it out, Reeves would kill you. Burton's 2006 biography, Black Gun, Silver Star, The Life and Legend of Frontier Marshal Bass Reeves, University of Nebraska Press, was a Spur Award finalist from Western Writers of America. And Burton's earlier book that includes a wealth of information on the legendary lawman, Black, Red, and Deadly, Black and Indian Gunfighters of the Indian Territory, 1870 to 1907, Eakin Press, 1991, has been optioned by actor Morgan Freeman and Revelations Entertainment for a possible TV series. Reeves's character also appeared in HBO's Watchmen last year, and David Gyasi plays him in director Wes Miller's Hell on the Border, released in December. Now's the perfect time to follow the trail of this black lawman of the West. Historic Van Buren. Likely born in June 1838 in Crawford County, Arkansas, Bass Reeves and his family were slaves, the property of William S. Reeves. As a free adult, Bass later lived in Van Buren, and when he retired as a deputy U.S. Marshal in 1907 at age 69, his mother was reportedly still living in Van Buren at age 87. Van Buren might be overshadowed by its neighbor, Fort Smith, where Bass became famous. But six blocks of the city's main street comprise a National Historic District, with buildings restored to their late 19th century, early 20th century appearance. A one-room schoolhouse sits on the county courthouse grounds. Bass, of course, never attended the school. Teaching slaves to read and write was prohibited in the pre-Civil War South, and Bass would remain illiterate his entire life. The Drennan Scott Historic Site became the home of businessmen John Drennan and Charles G. Scott, and illustrates life in antebellum Arkansas. The War Between the States. When Bass was around 8 years old, the Reeves family moved to Grayson County, Texas, with six slaves. They settled in Peter's Colony, northwest of Sherman, where the Sherman Museum, housed in a 1914 Carnegie Library, preserves the region's history. Bass soon became skilled with horses and learned, with support from the white family that owned him, how to handle firearms. When Civil War broke out, one of Reeves's sons, George, served as captain, later colonel, in the 11th Texas Cavalry before resigning in 1864 and returning home. In a 1901 newspaper interview, Bass said he served as George Reeves's manservant during the war and was at the battles of Chickamauga and Missionary Ridge. Burton discredits those stories, but says that Bass possibly was in the 11th in the December 1861 battle at Chustanala, when Confederate forces routed Union-sympathizing Creek and Seminole Indians and sent them fleeing to Kansas. A historical marker commemorating the battle can be found off State Highway 20 near Skiatook in Tulsa County. If Bass had been there, that battle may have made him wonder exactly what he was doing, riding with white men bent on keeping him in bondage. According to family lore, Bass decked George Reeves in a dispute over a card game and fled into the Indian Territory. He might have served in a Union regiment, but while living in Indian Territory, he learned of the Muskogee language, learned the country, learned more about firearms, becoming ambidextrous, and tracking. Seminole Indians also taught the 6'2" Reeves how to make himself seem smaller in the saddle. Mostly, Burton says, he had to learn how to stay alive. It was hell, Burton says of Oklahoma during the Civil War. A lot of people got killed. It was a pretty bad place to be. This was the most ravaged part of the country during that time. Honey Springs near Rentiesville, Locust Grove, Bayou Menard near Fort Gibson, Weber's Falls, Fort Towson, Fort Coffee near Spiro, Fort Davis near Bacone, and several other sites reveal just how far west the Civil War raged. Today, the Choctaw Nation Museum, Tuscahoma, Muskogee, Creek Nation Council House, Okmulgee, Chickasaw Council House and Museum, Tishomingo, Seminole Nation Museum, Wewoka, and Cherokee National History Museum, Tahlequah, are good places to learn about the history and culture of these peoples. Back to Arkansas. By 1870, with the Civil War over and all slaves freed, Bass and his family, wife Jenny and four children, settled in Arkansas. He bought a farm near Van Buren and scouted and tracked for the Federal Marshal's office. By 1880, he was living in a house on the corner of 2nd and Vine. In 1875, after Isaac Parker became the district judge for western Arkansas and the Indian Territory, Bass pinned on a deputy U.S. Marshal's badge in Fort Smith. He wasn't the first black federal lawman, but became the most famous. Reconstruction Fort Smith was under Republican control, Burton says, and it was a frontier town. It was very diverse, black, Indian, white. Juries were integrated. In the federal courts, guards, cooks, bailiffs, all of them were black until the Democrats regained control. Fort Smith preserves its history well. A 1906 warehouse is home to the Fort Smith Museum of History, which was founded in 1910. Even the visitor center is housed in a historic building, Miss Laura's Social Club, a former bordello. Still unfinished, the U.S. Marshals Museum aims to have its interior completed and collections installed by late this year or early next year. The best place to learn about Reeves and the law of Fort Smith is at Fort Smith National Historic Site, where Parker's courtroom, located in the old Army Post's military barracks, and the famed gallows are well preserved. So is the basement cell block, Hell on the Border. Bass spent 6 months in that dungeon after being charged with shooting to death his cook, William Leach, while rounding up criminals in the Chickasaw Nation in April 1884. Also visit the Clayton House, the home of William Henry Harrison Clayton, one of Parker's chief prosecutors. In 1887, Clayton helped defend Bass for the 1884 killing. Bass, who said the shooting was accidental, was acquitted. Bass spent most of his career chasing outlaws. He was all over the Indian Territory, Burton says. He rode as far west as Fort Sill, Fort Sill National Historic Landmark and Museum, Fort Reno Visitor Center and Museum, and Fort Supply Historic Site. That's quite a long way, Burton says, especially when you're traveling on horseback. Contemporary newspaper accounts report Reeves returning with wagons filled with prisoners, Indians, black men, sometimes women and white men. Reeves is the most successful marshal that rides in the Indian country, the Fort Worth Gazette reported on June 17, 1881. He is a holy terror to the lawless characters in the West. It is probable that in the past few years, he has taken more prisoners than any other officer. Paris to Muskegee. By 1893, Reeves was riding for the U.S. Court for the Eastern District of Texas in Paris. The Lamar County Historical Museum and Sam Bell Maxey State Historic Site offer good regional history lessons, and Western history buffs might want to check out the grave of cattle baron John Chisholm. 4 years later, Reeves started working out of the federal court in Muskegee, where today the Five Civilized Tribes Museum, Three Rivers Museum, and nearby Fort Gibson Historic Site are must stops for history buffs. Another town to visit is Boley, about 80 miles southeast of Muskogee. Founded in 1903, Boley was one of dozens of predominantly black settlements in Oklahoma. In 1905, another black deputy, W.R. Dick Shaver, the new marshal of Boley, and white outlaw Dick Simmons shot and killed each other. Boley's history and legacy are recalled at the Boley Historical Museum, and the town also holds the Boley Rodeo and Barbecue Festival every Memorial Day weekend. In May 1902, Reeves and a white deputy marshal, David Adams, were sent to Bragg's, about 10 miles south of Fort Gibson on Highway 10. A race war had reportedly broken out between white and black settlers. Details are sketchy, but the riot seems to have started when whites whipped a black man who allegedly had been caught stealing a hog. On May 20th, the two lawmen returned to Muskogee with 24 prisoners, 15 whites and 9 blacks. The deputies, the Dallas Morning News reported, made the arrests without resistance. Later that year, one of Reeves's sons, Benny, shot and killed his wife in a jealous rage. Reeves went out and arrested his own son after telling Marshal Leo Bennett, who suggested that another lawman bring in the killer, "Give me the writ." Benny Reeves surrendered, was convicted, and sentenced to the federal pen in Leavenworth, Kansas. By the time Bass retired, he said he had arrested more than 3,000 felons and shot and killed another 14. After he died on January 12, 1910, of Bright's disease, the Muskogee Phoenix called him a faithful servant of the law and a brave officer, noting his courage, honesty, and faithfulness to official duty. But Bass wasn't just mourned and praised in Oklahoma. As far away as Indiana, the Logansport Pharaohs reported Bass's death, calling him the most noted manhunter in the territory. His reputation has grown in the 21st century, thanks to magazine articles, books, and finally, some notice in La La Land. It's about time, as Burton says. Reeves is a role model for men and women in law enforcement today. Now here's an article from True West called Pillars of the Plains by Candy Moulton. Two of the most recognized women in the Old West are Sacajawea and Elizabeth Custer, and both of them have stories tied to the history of Western North Dakota. Their stories are just two of the many connected to this Great Plains landscape. Captain William Clark and Captain Meriwether Lewis, with their Corps of Discovery, started building a tri-sided fort near the Missouri River on November 2, 1804, and they would remain there through the winter. Their post, called Fort Mandan, about a dozen miles from present-day Washburn, North Dakota, was downstream from villages occupied by Mandan and Hidatsa Indians. At Mandan, Lewis wrote in his journal on February 11, 1805, one of the wives of the Charbonneau was delivered of a fine boy. This wife of Toussaint Charbonneau, the interpreter Lewis and Clark had hired to accompany them upriver later in the spring, was a woman of many names, known as Sacajawea, or in North Dakota, Sacajawea. She was Lemhi Shoshone, but had been adopted by Hidatsa raiders near the Three Forks of the Missouri and was later traded to Charbonneau, a French-Canadian trapper. Fort Mandan. During that winter of 1804 to 1805, Lewis and Clark and their men stayed close to Fort Mandan, though they visited regularly with the Mandans, seeking information about what they would find upriver when they departed in the spring. They knew Charbonneau spoke a variety of languages and would be helpful as they set off. Sacajawea was often with him in the quarters at Fort Mandan, and no doubt Lewis and Clark realized that her knowledge of the territory they would be traveling through would be useful to their mission. Her fluency in Shoshone and her ability to communicate with Charbonneau in Hidatsa were reason enough to take the young woman with them in the spring to travel the Missouri River in two pirogues and on foot. The location of Fort Mandan is not known for certain. It is most likely now under the waters of the Missouri River. But visitors can step into the areas where the Mandans and other Missouri River tribes lived. The Knife River villages, now a National Historic Site, are an hour northwest of Bismarck. One of the Knife River locations is Awatixa Village, also called Sasakawe Village. It had as many as 60 earth lodges, and the depressions of the sites of Mandan lodges are still visible. Bismarck and Fort Abraham Lincoln. Gain an overview of North Dakota's history at the North Dakota Heritage Center in Bismarck and visit Fort Abraham Lincoln, which overlooks on a slant village, a Mandan campsite that includes reconstructed earth lodges. The Mandans occupied the site on the flats along the Missouri River from about 1575 to 1781. Fort McKean was built nearby in 1872, and the following year a cavalry post was constructed, and the combined installations were renamed Fort Abraham Lincoln. When Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer arrived as the commander of the new post, he brought his wife, Elizabeth, Libby. This post quickly became one of the largest and most important on the northern plains. Custer and the 7th Cavalry drilled on the parade ground while Libby entertained in the commander's house. She had family around, including sister-in-law Margaret Calhoun. In addition to George, his two brothers Tom and Boston Custer, brother-in-law James Calhoun, and nephew Alty Reed all served in the Army and were stationed at Fort Lincoln. The 7th Cavalry marched away from the fort on May 17, 1876. The departure was impressive, as a dozen companies of troops, Indian scouts, and 150 wagons carrying equipment and supplies strung out in a column that was 2 miles long. With soldiers, civilians, teamsters, and the Indian scouts, the group numbered about 1,200 men and 1,700 animals, including a herd of cattle and extra horses and mules. With other women left behind at the fort, Elizabeth Custer and Margaret Calhoun watched the column until it disappeared into the distance. The fort would have been very quiet after the cavalry departure. The women visited each other and went about their daily duties until the devastating news reached them in late June that Custer's command had fallen in the battle at the Little Bighorn in Montana Territory. Libby Custer, her heart no doubt breaking after learning the news of the fight, picked up her shawl and accompanied Captain William McCaskey of the 20th Infantry, one of the men who had informed her of Custer's death, to visit the other women at the fort and tell them of their own husbands' fates. Once the sad duty had been carried out, Libby Custer returned to her own home, where they had held family gatherings and other social events. She packed her things and departed the fort, traveling to her family's home in Monroe, Michigan. She later wrote that a wounded thing must hide. But Libby Custer would pick herself up and spend the rest of her life writing books that honored her husband's legacy. The Great Confluence. The area near the confluence of the Yellowstone and Missouri Rivers became the site of Fort Union, the most important fur trading site on the upper Missouri during the 19th century. This American Fur Company post became a key location for trading with members of several Indian tribes, including the Assiniboine, Blackfeet, Plains Creek, Crow, Hidatsa, Mandan, and Chippewa. Indian women were at the post with their families to engage in trade. Some were painted by George Catlin after his travel through the area in 1832. Arguably, the most important woman associated with Fort Union was Natawista, the daughter of two sons, a leader in the Blood Tribe of the Blackfoot Confederacy. Born in about 1825, she traveled with her father to the Fort Union trading post when she was about 15 years old. There, she married Alexander Culbertson, the chief trader at Fort Union. Because trade was so important to the tribes, it was not uncommon for a headman, or chief, to forge relations with fur traders through the arranged marriages of their daughters. Natawista would serve an important role at Fort Union, bearing 5 children and assisting her husband with trading duties. She served as a translator and a hostess, gaining some credibility as a diplomat who bridged cultures. As Indians, Sacajawea and Natawista had deep connections to the Western lands and their lifestyles of their people, which required them to adapt to ever-changing conditions. Elizabeth Bacon had fallen in love with George Armstrong Custer, and following their marriage, she willingly traveled with him to his assignment posts in the West. Historic Medora. Medora von Hoffman, the daughter of a wealthy New York banker, likely never expected she would live in the Wild West. When traveling in Europe, she met and married a wealthy French nobleman, the Marquis de Morais. He came with her to America and began learning about the American West. He saw the place as a land of opportunity and came to Western North Dakota in April 1883. The Marquis selected an area where the Northern Pacific Railroad crossed the Little Missouri River, bought nearly 9,000 acres, and near the original town of Little Missouri, built a new town on the east bank of the river, naming it Medora for his wife. The area had everything the Marquis de Morais wanted and needed for his enterprise: abundant water, grass, and shelter for cattle, direct shipping on the railroad to markets in the east, and ice on the river to use in a packing plant. Besides being European and wealthy, the Marquis was an entrepreneur. He had convinced his father-in-law to provide the financial backing necessary to start his own company, the Northern Pacific Refrigerator Car Company. The business raised cattle, butchered them at the packing plant, and then shipped the meat to markets using refrigerated railroad cars to keep it fresh in transit. The operation lasted just 3 years, failing due to competition and partially because Eastern consumers did not like the taste of the range-fed beef. But the Marquis had not pinned all his hopes and dreams on one business. In addition to ranching and feeding cattle, he raised sheep and horses, had a freighting company and stagecoach line that linked Medora with Deadwood, South Dakota, and he established and operated ice houses along the route of the Northern Pacific between Helena, Montana and Duluth, Minnesota, using his refrigerated railroad cars to ship not only beef, but also other goods, including salmon, from the West Coast to the East Coast. Medora managed the couple's 26-room summer home, the Chateau de Morais, built on a bluff overlooking the town that bore her name. This home is now a North Dakota State Historic Site. Another early resident of the area was Theodore Roosevelt, who came in 1883 to hunt buffalo. Before leaving the region, he bought a share of Chimney Butte Ranch, locally known as the Maltese Cross. Roosevelt left North Dakota to return to New York and a political career, but was devastated by the deaths of his mother and wife within hours of each other. His baby daughter survived, but after the deaths of the women, Roosevelt returned to North Dakota, where he expanded his ranch holdings. Cattlemen in the region brought more and more head of livestock to the area. And then disaster struck with a severe winter in 1886 that killed hundreds of thousands of animals. The Great Die-Up devastated many ranchers' operations, including Roosevelt's. Those experiences in the West were profound for Roosevelt, and when he became President of the United States, he implemented conservation measures that preserved lands across the nation. The land he explored and the badlands where he hunted are now part of the 70,000-acre Theodore Roosevelt National Park, one of the primary attractions in the Medora area. During the summer, the Medora musical is performed in an outdoor amphitheater, sharing stories related to Roosevelt from his time in the region to the charge up San Juan Hill with his Rough Riders during the Spanish-American War. While in the area, visit the Maltese Cross Cabin and the North Dakota Cowboy Hall of Fame.
Thank you for joining us for the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Your narrator has been Jack. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. And
next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Noon Book Hour, followed by the coronavirus update at 1.
Coronavirus Briefs.
The Midland Community Health Care Services on Monday detailed that per guidance from the CDC that all Midland clinics must utilize social distancing. There will be no walk-in patients or unscheduled visits to any of the clinics. All must have an appointment.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back into the water.
What's your name again?
Chrissy.
Where are we going?
Swimming!
A terrifying unseen force beneath the water begins killing. A killer shark unleashes chaos on a beach community.
That shark, he looks right into you.
right into your eyes.
It's up to a marine biologist and an old seafarer to hunt the beast down.
You know the thing about a shark? He's got lifeless eyes. Black eyes, like a doll's eye.
Based on Peter Benchley's best-selling novel, Recording Library of West Texas presents the 1975 blockbuster, Jaws. Starring Roy Scheider.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Richard Dreyfuss.
He's circling the boat for us.
And Robert Shaw.
Hold it up. He's coming straight for us.
Audio described Jaws.
Smile, you son of a...
Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand by me, stand by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble the sea, I won't cry, I won't cry, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand by me, and darling, darling, stand by me, oh, stand by me, oh, stand now. Stand by me, stand by me. Stand by me. Whenever you're in trouble, won't you stand by
now? Here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 82 and partly cloudy. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 60s. Then, tomorrow, sunny with a high in the mid-90s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 12 noon.
It's time for the Noon Book Hour. Readings of books from all genres, handpicked by staff at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Beach Read by Emily Henry. Read for you by Julia Whalen. Chapter 16. The Porch Furniture. Thursday at noon, Gus was back at his kitchen table, looking less sexily disheveled and more like he'd been dragged behind a dump truck with a loose tailgate. He smiled and waved, and I returned the gesture, despite the sick roiling in my stomach. He scribbled a note. "Sorry I've been MIA this week." I wished that hadn't replaced the nausea with the zero-gravity rush of a roller coaster loop. I looked around. I hadn't brought my notebook in today. I went into the bedroom and grabbed it, writing, "Nothing to be sorry about," as I ambled back into the room. I held the note aloft. Gus's smile wavered. He nodded, then jerked his attention back to his laptop. It was harder to focus on writing now that he was back, but I did my best. I was about a quarter of the